and present students. She is currently a senior fellow researcher at Chelsea College of Art and Design in London and is designing hand and digitally printed textiles for her own label, Be Early. Her dedication and enthusiasm has earned her a nomination for the Great Britain's Award 2006. So, without further ado, please help me welcome Rebecca Early.
Hello. Thank you for that lovely welcome. Okay, today I'm going to talk to you about my work as a designer. And to really embrace the theme, sometimes you just have to do it yourself. I think when I read the email from JP inviting me here, and I read the theme of the conference, I immediately thought how fantastic that was. Because for me, my career has always been about making my own decisions, making up my own projects, and kind of carving my own way. And there was no guidebook to becoming a fashion textile designer and starting my own label, and certainly no guidebook to becoming an eco-aware designer. So it's very important for young designers to be pioneers, to be innovators. So I'm hoping that my presentation might inspire some of the designers in the audience to take that on board. Don't know how to make this work, sorry. Okay. At Chelsea College of Art and Design in 1996, I became involved with a project called TED, Textiles Environment Design. This project helped me to transform my practice from being just another fashion textile designer to being a considerate designer. All my design decisions now put the environment first. In this presentation, I'm going to tell you about the environmental issues that create the challenges for eco-textile design, the design strategies I have developed for my practice, and about my design projects and outcomes. I'm also going to refer throughout to the notion that as designers, we have to do more than design products. In order to make a change in terms of the environment, we have to innovate and be original on every level. There's no need for me to go into great detail about why considering the environmental impact of textiles is relevant. I think Dr. David Suzuki did an excellent job of that last night, and I know that you're probably all incredibly aware of our current issues. Environmental concerns are currently at the top of almost every agenda. In studies published in 1991, the textile industry was found to be one of the most damaging industries in the world, second only to the chemical industry. I think it was interesting last night when David Suzuki said that he was working particularly with housing, food, and transport. It's so often the case that fashion and textiles are overlooked, but actually the textile industry is hugely damaging. However, as an eco-design discipline, fashion and textiles is the most overlooked and under-considered area. Often dismissed as frivolous and unnecessary, eco-design theorists have continually ignored fashion and textiles, choosing instead to concentrate on architecture, automotive design, and product design. Sorry, I can't get this to move on. Firstly, let's consider chemical pollution. All the production processes utilized in textile production involve the use of harmful chemicals. The growing and harvesting, the extraction and extrusion, the spinning, weaving and knitting, and the finishing, dyeing and printing of textiles. The industry continues to be one of the most damaging industries in the world. For example, 1 million cases of poisoning and possibly 20,000 deaths each year are attributable to the use of pesticides in cotton production. Cotton grows on less than 3% of the world's farmland, but accounts for over 22% of all pesticides used in agriculture. I'm sorry, but I can't. I'm sorry, technical problem. I'll be back in a minute. I need to scroll down here at the end of the text. Okay. And it's not responding.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, we're back in business. Secondly, the demand for faster and cheaper fashion and trends means that clothes are made in extremely competitive conditions, and controlling and regulating situations for workers is proving almost impossible. 90% of these workers are women, either working in factories or as home workers, and they typically work 10 to 12 hours with no breaks, with a 7-day week typical in peak season. Thirdly, the problem of transportation. Like the now famous food miles in the food industry, the carbon emissions involved in the transportation of textiles and fashion products is a pressing issue, especially when you consider the complexity of the supply chain in the textile and garment industry. More than in any other industry, a fashion or textile product will be made from component parts from all over the world. The fibre and yarn is produced in one country, then shipped to be spun in another, then shipped again to separate production and finishing processes, before finally being made up into the garment somewhere else. By the time the garment is on our backs, it is very, very well travelled. By its very nature, fashion can mean that we buy what we don't need, wear it rarely, and dispose of it quickly. A vast proportion of the clothes bought in the UK every year are now bought in supermarkets, and new collections arrive in high street stores every 6 to 8 weeks. There is a demand for cheaper clothing, and as a result, a shorter expected life cycle. In the UK, over 1 million tonnes of textiles are discarded annually, and 500 tonnes of this is unwanted clothing. Finally, and most surprisingly, recent research shows that all the impacts mentioned above add up to only 5 to 10% of a garment's environmental impact in terms of energy use. The other 90 to 95% come from the consumer's laundering habits. Simply washing too hot, too often, and using a tumble dryer creates the most carbon emissions in the life cycle of the garment. So, with that in mind, how can textile and fashion designers affect a positive change? This statement from the Design Council proposes that if designers can make informed and appropriate design decisions at the outset, the performance of any product can be improved by up to 90%. This statement inspired us at TED to challenge the textile designer to make environmental improvements by design. We created a unique stance in research terms. Other research projects look to the manufacturer and the producer to clean up their act. We challenge the textile designer at the beginning of the chain to design more considerately at the outset. How can we help designers to do this? What theory can we draw upon? Virtually no theory exists for eco and fashion textile design. To say that it's a young field is an understatement. Fashion and textiles has always been regarded as superfluous and frivolous. So we looked to eco-design theory from other disciplines and began to apply them to textile and fashion design through practice-based projects. The TED project acts as an umbrella to support textile designers at Chelsea. There are around 12 members at present. Staff work collaboratively and individually on projects that employ one or more of our design strategies. So I'm going to go straight into talking about what we've developed as design strategies before I then show you some projects that illustrate how these can be applied. So straight away, there are six here, and reducing the chemical impacts can be done quite quickly, actually, by making better material decisions. So material selection, process selection, the use of new technologies that have lower impacts, designing for short life and long life design, reusing materials, recycling, and designing specifically for things to be reused to give them another life after they've had their first life. To use ethical production in developing and producing products, and to reduce the need to transport materials and goods. by using local design concepts. These will all become much clearer when I show you some work that has used these. But also to kind of design to improve consumer attachment and the consumer's enjoyment and experience of a product. A theory called emotionally durable design is something that we can apply to fashion and textile design. Multifunction. And actually designing for to inspire the consumer to design things for themselves, to make things for themselves, to be involved in the design process. And for designers to actually think about designing systems and services that complement, that support a product, or maybe even replace a product. It's important for fashion and textile designers to also think about designing clothes and textiles specifically for low launder, and to increase the consumer's knowledge about best laundry practices. As I showed you earlier, this can be up to 90 to 95% of the impact of a garment. And finally, we're also encouraging designers to take a more active role, to go beyond designing products, but to think about the opportunities that are out there for involving themselves or leading the way in terms of writing books and curating exhibitions and holding events, maybe devising workshops, actual events that support and maybe even replace the need for a product, to get people involved, to inform people. We see this as the job of the designer of the future. So now I'll talk about a few examples of my design projects that have helped me develop these strategies. I'll show examples of individual projects, collaborative projects, and larger group projects. I'm a printed textile designer that creates innovative textiles, most often in a fashion context. I graduated from Central St Martins with an MA in fashion in 1994. And during that time, I developed a way of printing which was unique. I used real textiles and coated them, airbrushed them in reactive dyes, and pressed them using heat and pressure into synthetic base cloths. And this left an unusual impression on the garment, on the fabric. So I could create the effect of a knitted fabric, an impression of that onto a flat satin fabric. I call this technique a heat photogram. So here you can see a discarded child's jumper that I found in the street that I actually dyed up and then used as a printing template. And it's been printed here into a recycled fleece for the scarf and also into a satin fabric to make a woman's top. So I was concerned with images when at the outset and actually sort of avoiding florals and spots and checks and the traditional patterns and really wanting to challenge the images used on printed textiles. This technique preempted digital printing and was regarded as radically innovative at the time. So here you can see a ripped lace dress on the left-hand side that I've used to form an image on a new fabric, and on the right you can see that image on a plain shift dress. I found I could use any small object to create a print. The three-dimensionality of the object created a halo or a glow effect on the cloth, an effect that was not possible to produce using traditional methods. This marked my work out as unique and innovative, and I became widely commissioned and collected. Here you can see a photographic screen print onto a skirt that I did for the singer Bjork. If you can see that it's a man hugging the legs. I was very interested in trompe l'oeil imagery. Here I was using chicken wire to create a glowing wire effect on satin, and also a new dye that had been developed at the time called a retroflective dye, which threw the light back to a light source. So it made it perfect for flash photography. In 1999, I showed a collection in Copenhagen, and I began to use recycled fabrics and basically try to remake those fabrics into new garments by laminating. And this technique was using discarded carrier bags to laminate over old clothing. So here you can see an old school skirt, which is pleated, but has been laminated closed into a new sleek shape by using old shower curtain material. In 1998, as a response to the emerging interests of the TED cluster, I developed the process further by creating an exhaust print technique. This was inspired by exhaust dyeing, where a dye vat is used over and over again until the water runs clear. This meant that my print technique now created no water pollution or chemical wastage. I applied this technique to commercial ranges, such as this menswear collection for Harvey Nichols. This is a three-dimensional piece of knitwear used to create a gradually fading image on a collection of scarves. The base fabric was recycled PET fleece made from mineral water bottles. My commercial work was gradually becoming more and more environmentally conscious. In 1999, I began to challenge the fashion context and create work for public art projects, such as the radiotherapy treatment gowns for the Queen Elizabeth Hospital, shown here. The print on these gowns used a selection of herbs that I grew in my garden, and these adhered to recipes that I had researched, which are about complementary medicine. So as the women were undergoing treatment, there was a wealth of supporting material that advised them what they should be drinking and eating during this treatment. And I grew these herbs, and I kind of made the recipes as a visual reference on the fabric of the gowns that they had to wear for treatment. Each gown was individual. There was 100 of them, and they were categorized. Previously, they'd been categorized by size, in color. So if you were very large, you wore a pink one. If you were medium, you wore a blue one. But I changed that so that the colors now were not relevant to size, but every single color was different. And there was a simple numbering system in the back of the gown. And this is quite important because people feel very self-conscious and vulnerable when they're undergoing treatment. And to be kind of branded as large in a pink gown wasn't very good for the patient at all. So I kind of decided with this project to take it a stage further and to get 100 people together to model them and to produce a kind of press campaign to advertise the issues and the commission. And this is where I suppose my work started to not just be about the product, but to actually be about the event and the information surrounding a product. And this is quite an important prerequisite for working with eco issues, I found. Between 2000 and 2002, I worked with scientists at the Eden Project in Cornwall and designed a garden and an installation, performances and clothing around the theme of natural indigo dye. So again, over a two to three year period, I was working with groups of people, not just with the textile process, but with many other aspects that related to disseminating information, really. This is the woad plant, a very unattractive plant, and the brief to design a garden based on this plant was very difficult. But the dye itself was quite magical, and kids, we ran kids' workshops and taught them how to dye. We also developed clothing and developed a Blue at Two catwalk show that happened every day. So we were getting the audience really involved. And we also trained the performance team that work at the Eden Project and made costumes for them based on the history of indigo dye. And they actually were able to perform daily the story of indigo dye. So I found it quite fascinating that as a designer, I was suddenly in a situation where I was working with performance and activities as well as designing textiles and information about a dye. I also developed these recycled performance jackets for the team, which use offcuts from the biosphere, from the biomes there at the garden. So from this point onwards, really my work, I fell in love with working collaboratively and working in teams. And from 2002 onwards, my work has all been about creating groups of people, teams, to actually tackle environmental issues. I found that working environmentally, working with these issues, a team situation is so much more productive. This is very unknown territory, and we really needed to brainstorm constantly. And one of the downsides, really, of being a designer sometimes is being in the studio on your own for long periods of time. So I found working collaboratively really opened up my practice. One of my first projects was called Material, and it was about three different approaches to eco-fashion design. And these came at the different stages. These were intended for the different stages of the life cycle. So at the production phase at the beginning, the use phase, where the consumer is owning, and the disposal stage at the end of the life cycle. So here you can see a project where I've recut a garment and given to the team basically a bag full of pieces and said to them, each of them, you have the same garment. It's not made up, it's cut out pattern pieces, but you also have all the offcuts. And the point of this one-day workshop was to basically use all of the offcuts in this production run and embellish and decorate the garment using the offcuts. So there was zero waste. So in a day, we produced six innovative garments, all from the same pattern pieces that used all of the waste material. This project transformed a wedding dress. I spend a lot of time in second-hand shops looking for unusual items that can be reinvented, and I often would find a wedding dress, and it just seemed very sad that it would sort of be crumpled and stained and discarded, and you just sort of think, well, who's going to wear that? What's going to happen to that? So I would overprint it and recut it and make new garments from the wedding dress. The redesign project worked with a menswear fashion designer, and we took his collection on the left and we redesigned it using organic and low-impact materials. So his trousers became organic hemp denim jeans, and the shirts became organic hemp silk mixed shirts. And it was really just an exercise to see what happened if we took a normal fashion range and redesigned it using these lower-impact fabrics. It was quite an interesting experiment because the fashion designer hated what we'd done. So that was an interesting learning experience. In 2002, I became a research fellow and collaborated on an AHRC-funded project with an eco-theorist called Dr. Kate Fletcher. This project explored five conceptual approaches to fashion textile design. This first slide shows our no-wash sweatshirt and the local bag. The sweatshirt was designed specifically to never have to be washed. The local bag was made from scrap leather found in Brick Lane and knitted up by an Asian woman's community project called Heba and sold to local people to use for shopping in the local markets. This slide shows the updatable t-shirt. A simple white t-shirt was given to each designer in the project team, and then they had to update and customize it themselves every month, interpreting a current design trend brief, which was sent by post from Kate Fletcher and I. The interesting thing about this project was that the designers were all trained graduates, and they found it very, very difficult to cut into and remake a t-shirt that belonged to them, that they were kind of currently attached to and working on. To the point that they actually sort of sometimes wouldn't be able to do it. And we found this was really interesting because originally we thought that this would be quite a good idea for a company like Marks & Spencer's to actually sell a t-shirt, but sell a kind of a service to their customer whereby the customer could sort of cut the sleeves off and gradually adjust the t-shirt over the years. But because we found that even these trained textile designers found this task difficult, we realized that maybe the general public would find it even more difficult. So sewing classes needed, basically. This is a slide of us dyeing our t-shirts in one particular workshop, and some images of some of the redesigned shirts. Nine Lives sought to create two separate garments that have subsequent lives designed into them at the outset. So the dress and the jumper on the left-hand side were designed specifically to come together as one garment later on. So the idea being, when you tire of one of the garments, it's another life has been built into it. So the dress had a laser-cut pattern cut into it, and the knitwear piece was designed to be unravelled and become the embroidery thread that would be used into the laser-cut pattern on the dress. So again, it was about involving the consumer in the process of transformation again. The Caress dress was designed in response to the question, how can a garment be designed to meet emotional needs such as affection or a sense of belonging? So for this, we gave our team diaries, wardrobe diaries, and asked them to go to their wardrobes and look at all their clothes and describe the how they felt when they were wearing their clothes and what things they consciously put on for particular occasions. So if somebody was having dinner with their boyfriend, sometimes they would wear a kind of fluffy cardigan because they knew that they would maybe get their arms stroked. So it was kind of this subconscious attachment that we have to certain cuts and colours and clothes. So we designed a dress that was invited your company to kind of stroke your arms and various, all very experimental, and I wouldn't recommend putting this particular dress into production. But it was about trying to think differently as a fashion textile designer. So these are sketches, really, sketches for trying to give ourselves different design briefs. My current project, the Top 100 project, attempts to combine multiple design strategies, recycling, low launder, and increase consumer attachment, for example. It's an ongoing project that intends to recycle 100 shirts in themed sets of 10. They're all polyester shirts, and my fascination with polyester comes from the print process that I described to you earlier, the heat photogram process, but also because polyester is a hugely important fiber and a widely used fiber, which essentially goes, when a garment's discarded, goes straight back into landfill. It's a plastic that we're throwing away, and it's a plastic that, unlike water bottles, we're not recycling. So I'm intrigued, really, with how we can reuse and recycle polyester. Many people, when they look at eco-fashion textiles, they think straight away of organic cotton as being the lowest impact fabric. However, cotton is a hungry fiber, and it takes a lot of energy to wash and iron, and its impact is actually huge when you compare it to a polyester garment, which can be washed at a very low temperature, doesn't need ironing or tumble drying. So polyester actually outperforms cotton on many levels, and I'm interested in how we can develop it as a fibre for the future. All of these shirts are found in secondhand shirts. They often just have one tiny stain on the front that renders them unusable, unwearable, and there's nothing else wrong with the garment. Sometimes the garment might be outdated. It might be 1970s or 1980s in style, so may need recutting. But often, by overprinting, I can reissue the shirt as a brand new object, garment to be worn. So all of this work kind of came together last year in an exhibition that I curated. And really what I was doing when I was making the shirts, I've been making the shirts for quite a few years now, is I was looking to show them in an exhibition, and I couldn't find a suitable exhibition. I couldn't find a suitable event. And I kept going to new shows in Paris and in other places and just sort of thinking, why am I here? This isn't quite right. No one's interested in the issues behind the shirts. No one else is making eco work, or, you know, and I realized it came to me that I had to curate my own exhibition. And up until this moment, I hadn't thought of taking on that role, but I think that this is really important. If you can't find a suitable context for the work that you make, then maybe you need to create it. So it was a two-year endeavour to sort of bring together 21 UK-based fashion designers that were all exploring eco issues. As well as curating the exhibition, I wanted to kind of create situations for the designers to meet each other, because I also felt, as an exhibiting designer, that you would just send the work somewhere and it would get hung, and then you would turn up for the private view maybe, and then you would leave again, that you just sort of didn't really have enough kind of interaction with the other designers, or really enough of an enriching experience from being part of that exhibition. So I brought all the designers together for a workshop to kind of brainstorm, to talk about their inspirations and their concerns, and to create an exhibit that welcomes the audience to the exhibition. And I called it the Collaborative Sketchbook. And we literally, through a one-day workshop, came up with 8 themes for the objects and the issues and the items that the designers wanted to bring to the table. And this created the context for the viewer. So as they entered the exhibition, they were able to see where some of these ideas had come from, see some of the precedents for the work that was in the exhibition. The designers hated this process at first. Fashion designers in particular are very sticky about talking to each other about their ideas and sharing. And I found myself at 11 o'clock in the morning thinking, this is not going to work. And by the afternoon, and some strong coffee and some chocolate biscuits, it was rocking. They had the best time, because they don't get to share and talk. It's all very guarded, and actually that's not the way to design ecologically aware designs. They need to learn from, we all need to learn from each other, and we all need to talk more. So as soon as designers leave college, they stop talking about their work, and they stop sharing their ideas. And this became a really important part of the exhibition for me, for them as well, I think. So they brought things, we stuck them down on the table, we created a timeline, we put things down in order of date, and we kind of worked out what the themes were on the table, and everybody got very involved. And then this part of the exhibition was actually the back flies, if you like, of the main exhibition, so it was behind the scenes, it had the sense of being behind the scenes at a theatre. The first room contained work that was all about the beginning of the life cycle. So we had the processes like organic cotton and dyeing at this stage. These are all organic fabrics, undyed organic fabrics. And this was a really interesting project where the designers had not only remade the garments, they had actually gone out onto the street and photographed people in Peckham in London and then completely remade their outfits in these fabrics. I know it sounds similar to the project that I showed earlier, but this is done in a very different way by different people. Jeans by Howies. If you don't know and you want to find out about eco-fashion, Howies is the company to look at. They're called Howies, howies.co.uk. And they're kind of like casual wear, so jeans, T-shirts, sweatshirts. But their catalogues, their website is just full of information, and it's incredibly seductive. And if you want a crash course in eco-fashion design, look at their website. Enamore use hemp and vintage fabrics. And they really, Jenny really was key in reinventing hemp for the British fashion public, I think. She's now doing hemp lingerie. I think people always think of hemp as very rough fabric, but it's it can be woven and be very, very beautiful. We also had a designer, Dr. Emma Newberg, who really questions PVC and synthetics and gives PVC in particular a new eco spin. She uses a low impact version of PVC and really creates a kind of aesthetic effect that you would normally find with maybe a hand-dyed silk. Ciel use low-impact dyes, azo-free dyes, and other low-impact fabrics to create very urban, hard-wearing jackets, long-life products, classics, hopefully. Gracie Burnett is a natural dyer, and for this exhibition she made a film about her practices, but natural dyes are another approach that many people think are eco, and they are to a certain extent, but actually using mordants, which fix the dye to the cloth and the amount of water used in the process in both the dyeing of the growing of the plants and the processing, makes it in some ways not as good as other processes. So with everything in fashion, you think you kind of, with eco-fashion and these materials, you think you've got an answer, and always there's a counter-argument. So over time, I realised that there's always going to be a counter-argument. You have to develop many strategies and many approaches and kind of multi-layer them. And you're never going to have a perfect garment. But it's important to sort of take on these ideas. It's not enough, really, to just create the next trend for the next 6 months that's going to be discarded. These shoes are by Terra Plana, and they use recycled fabrics and also low-impact vegetable tanned leathers. And they're all hand-stitched together using traditional craft techniques, which means that if they come apart, if the sole comes off, you need to repair them. You can do so with stitching rather than glues, and it's the glues in the shoe industry that are particularly harmful. Going into the second room, we looked at recycling. You can see Sari here, which is a London label that reuses women's saris to make new evening wear. Worn Again Trainers, another good website to look at, is wornagain.co.uk. And these are made 100% from recycled army surplus, a lot of it, blankets and parachutes and trousers, with a low-impact recycled rubber sole. And the bags here are using old leather belts. So this particular designer collects hundreds and hundreds of leather belts and then puts them together and works with traditional Italian leather workers to make these beautiful barrel bags. So with recycled textiles, I was really looking for high-quality products at the end, and it's quite difficult because there's a lot of recycled fashion going on at the moment, but it's often quite tatty-looking. And I think if you're going to genuinely tempt people to buy recycled clothing instead of new, you've got to make it very, very good quality and very unusual. I'm going to kind of fast-forward to a few things I definitely want to show you before I run out of time, but this is a Howie sweatshirt, which is low launder. So we tried to also look at the consumer use phase in the exhibition, and very few designers are taking on the idea of low launder. How do you design clothing so that it has to be washed less often? And as this is the biggest impact, I'm really amazed that more designers aren't really tackling these issues, this design challenge. This merino wool underlayer jumper has natural factors in the fiber, which means that it doesn't smell. So they test this on cyclists, and if you hang it up at the end of the day, it airs, and the natural properties in the wool will actually make it wearable again. Multifunction, this designer, Ben Shine, designs clothing that can be worn in 6 or 7 different ways. So a cagoule to a scarf to a t-shirt to a jacket, it's all in one garment. And consumer involvement, this label, Red Mother, are very interesting in that you can send them a garment for them to recycle and remake for you to your own design brief. So for about £50, you can send them a t-shirt along with some scraps and pictures, a magazine cutting, a photograph, whatever it is, and they'll remake a t-shirt for you, recycle a t-shirt for you that will be completely unique and just for you and full of your personal memorabilia. And it's a very simple idea, but it's very clever because We need services like this. We need to be able to go into our wardrobes and instead of going, I'm bored, what can I put on today? I'll go shopping. We need to think, well, how can I be creative? How can I make something new out of what I've already got? I also, to finish the exhibition, as you would do in a catwalk show, wanted a wedding dress, and I couldn't find an eco wedding dress to include. So I wrote a project and got funding for it and got a team of us together to brainstorm and think about what makes an eco wedding dress. We came up with four different strategies. If you're interested, the well-fashioned website address I've put up at the end, and it describes those different scenarios. But the one that we made was called Dress to Art, and we realised that women often wanted to keep their dress after the big day to constantly remind them, like the ultimate textured photograph. But it would sit in the wardrobe and nothing would ever happen to it. So with this particular dress, made from hemp silk, the bodice part actually unraveled flat and became a wall piece, so they could really have their textured photograph on the wall in their new marital home and be constantly reminded of the day and of their vows and their beautiful wedding dress. So it's just trying to give, again, another life to a product. And the fact that I devised information, again, this is important for designers to not just produce the product, but think, what do I want to tell the audience? What do I want to tell the visitor? And actually work on putting that information together as well. So there's an interactive website. And that probably will have a longer life in a way than the exhibition. Which brings me to, finally, just talking about the TED Materials resource that I've set up at Chelsea. In 2003. This is now an open access facility for students and for other interested members of the public. We open by appointment to help designers create their own unique toolboxes. So what we're interested in is meeting designers that have that they want to design a more eco-aware product, but they don't know how to do it. We're actually offering a service that enables those designers to build their own personal toolbox, so to help them with their materials, their dyes, their manufacturing processes, and maybe actually introduce them to theories and design concepts that they hadn't previously considered. Finally, I was going to talk to you about a recycling project that I've also started working on. It's a 3-year project, and I've just finished the first year, but I've decided to save this for my breakout session this afternoon. So if any of you are interested, I'm going to tell you more about this particular project and do a workshop based on multiple strategies around textile recycling. I want to finish really by talking about my students and my role as a tutor and their role in industry when they leave college. My role as a printed textile design tutor began in the studio and workshop to the BA and the MA students at Chelsea. And as my research work evolved, my role within the department gradually extended into teaching theory. Since 2002, I've been encouraging students to explore the environmental issues relating to the textile industry. And I developed a regular contemporary practitioners lecture series and a green textiles lecture series to progress these interests. This has dramatically increased the number of and quality of textile students' dissertations that tackle these issues. This particular theoretical and sometimes practical component is unique in the UK. I've now been approached by other colleges to help develop programs. So there's a real growth in interest. Another interesting website is called Fashioning and Ethical Industry, and it's a new venture in the UK which is really looking at training fashion and textile tutors so that they can teach these issues, because the key thing is there just aren't enough practitioners that understand the issues and know really how to teach. There are more students interested and willing and able to take on these issues than there are tutors. Throughout these teaching commitments, I've always encouraged the textile students to find ways to challenge their work by fusing environmental concerns with really cutting-edge contemporary design. And I think that's important as well, that we have to look at producing the highest quality, most cutting-edge work, and not just resting on our laurels and thinking that because we've made it from recycled fabrics, it's enough. It's not enough. What happens to these designers? What happens to these students in the industry? They graduate to work in the industry at every level, and we hope that through their experience at Chelsea, they're able to make more informed decisions when designing textiles. But what influence and effect might they have? And will their decisions really make a difference? When working for industry, the freelance textile designer and the in-house designer most often feed the industry prior to the manufacture and the production phase. So you can see highlighted in red where our designers, a fashion textile designer, will go and work in the industry. And it's all at that initial stage, whether it's in the prediction industry or in the design and development of a yarn or in the design and development of the cloth or the design and production of the actual embellishment, the decoration that goes on the cloth, or the actual garment. So it's really up there at the beginning of the life cycle. They are the sole source for design work that goes into production. So they're often seen as the kind of little sister of the industry, textile designers working at home on printing on their kitchen table. Those samples will go into production and they will have an impact. They are feeding into industry. And it's important that those designers are aware that every decision they make about colour, about cloth, about intention, the intended use, that it really does have an impact. And one final slide shows, I think, for me, how potentially these small decision makers can add up to have a very great effect. This is an adapted slide from The Long Tail by Chris Anderson, which is a book I'll recommend to you. But basically, through the internet, we're now at a point where small designers, individuals, setting up maybe small labels or little studios, the collected impact of those companies outweighs the larger companies. So there's the 80-20 factor, the fact that 20% of what is being made is being bought by 80% of the population. That's the way the industry used to work. So 80% of us are buying just 20% of the labels that are out there. But the long tail is saying, no, actually, there's a massive number, there's a massive choice, and we can access all of that choice through the internet, through websites. So these small decisions, these small design projects, can have collectively a huge impact. And that's really the thought that I want to leave, especially with the design students here today, the fact that if you go out into industry, your small decisions can have a big effect. And finally, for anybody interested, there's some website information. Thank you very much.